Welcome to CareCast, CareNet's podcast on family, faith, and life with Roland Warren, CareNet's president and CEO, and Vincent DeCaro, CareNet's chief outreach officer. CareCast and more pro-abundant life commentary from CareNet can be found at care-net.org, where you can watch videos, download ebooks, and subscribe to the Abundant Life blog. Now let's listen in on what Roland and Vince have for us this week on CareCast.
So Roland, here we are for another episode of your favorite podcast.
My only podcast. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And we assume that our listeners don't listen to any other podcast other than this one.
Why would they?
This is the only podcast.
I think we own the entire internet.
We do. Yeah, when one of our podcasts goes live, the internet essentially shuts down.
It shuts down.
The demand is...
Everyone's listening.
Outrageous. Yeah.
So thank you for listening, although you don't have a choice.
Right. Interestingly enough, we're actually here in where our headquarters office is for CareNet.
Yeah.
There's most of the internet traffic in the country actually passes through this town, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is kind of random, right? It's not like a huge town. And so we have all – so we're like literally at the hub of like national internet traffic.
Yeah.
And it's good because that's the kind of capacity we need.
Yes.
In order to meet the demand of our customers wanting to listen to our podcast.
I know. So. If we weren't here, let's say if we moved someplace else, I don't know what would happen to the internet.
Well, yeah.
So we're kind of locked in.
It would be a problem. Yeah. So, so it's good we're here. So – and I think what we have here to talk about in this particular episode I think is pretty interesting stuff. So I don't remember the last time you folks heard from us exactly, but a lot has happened in the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, there was a major national announcement by presidential candidate Donald Trump where he essentially laid out what his – stances on the abortion issue and where he's going to kind of be taking that in terms of his reelection campaign. When he made that statement, you can only imagine that every person who pays attention in any way, shape, or form to the abortion issue had something to say about it. So people on the pro-choice side, people on the pro-life side, the commentary has been running absolutely wild ever since Donald Trump made the statement, which he made, which is essentially that he is not going to support a national abortion law of any kind, but that this is a decision that should be left up to the states, and we're going to just kind of let the states do what they do on abortion. Right?
Yeah, and so, he expanded, and he went even beyond that to say that, you know, it's the will of the people.
Right, right.
And then also, I think some additional things about following your conscience and some other things related to that. So he really added some additional commentary to that position, and certainly there were people who were extremely disappointed with that perspective and felt that that he shouldn't have kind of framed things the way that he did, you know. So it was really kind of an interesting thing of how it sort of divided the room. And that's what we're going to talk about.
But right.
What is that division?
Yeah, yeah. And what's the room that we're talking about? And,
and
in what way is it divided?
Yeah.
And also that there actually isn't really just one room, but people kind of think that there is. And there are multiple rooms, and we'll get into that in a moment. But one of the pieces that very recently came out in, you know, sort of in response to what Donald Trump had said, was a piece written by David French for the opinion page of the New York Times. And his article was entitled "The Hypocrisy of the Pro-Life Movement." And so the hypocrisy that he's referring to there is sort of the political hypocrisy. But in our view, he was right about some of what he said, but I think incorrect about some of the other things that he said in this article.
Yeah.
So why don't we start with what we think David French got right in his article, calling out the hypocrisy of the pro-life movement. So why don't you start there, Roland?
Yeah, I think what he's kind of referring to is, you know, basically the premise of, like, why are you pro-life? And what is the premise of being pro-life? And the statement that has been sort of guiding the pro-life movement, it's a morality-based statement, and certainly from a Christian worldview, which is the worldview that we have, it's kind of very much linked to, you know, that children are created in the image of God, and from conception to natural death, that people are alive. They're alive inside the womb, they're alive outside the womb, and it's a life worth protecting, not a life worth sacrificing.
Right, right.
And so the basic question that you have with abortion is, when is it okay to kill an innocent human life, right? When is it okay to kill an innocent human life? And so the pro-life position essentially has been, never.
Right, right.
It's never okay to kill an innocent human life, and therefore abortion kills an innocent human life, and therefore it's morally wrong, and therefore should be legally wrong. Okay?
Yeah.
So that is kind of the premise, the guiding premise that sort of kind of orients the whole, your kind of pro-life perspective.
Right, right? Absolutely. That's the core perspective.
Core perspective.
Yeah, right.
So then, okay, what would the hypocrisy be? Hmm. Well, the hypocrisy would be that if someone mm-hmm. who you've kind of framed as a leader of the pro-life movement or carrying the water for the pro-life movement or carrying a pro-life narrative mm-hmm. moves off of that core perspective mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form mm-hmm. and then moves from there, you then have a choice to make.
Right.
Right. And, you know, you and I were talking about this. And for those of you who are from rural parts of the world, right, mm-hmm. I was talking about the fact that, you know, that basically, you know, from the pro-life movement, mm-hmm. if you will, right? Mm-hmm. And I use that as a monolith in mm-hmm. this context, but we're going to talk about the fact that it's not.
Yeah, right.
But as a monolith, the pro-life movement is sort of like a wagon, mm-hmm. and it's connected to a horse, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And that horse is eating from a stall, mm-hmm. right? And the perspective here that I was kind of talking about when we were talking about this is that, mm-hmm. okay, so you hooked your wagon to this horse, mm-hmm. and you believe that the horse is committed to the stall, which mm-hmm. is the sanctity of life stall, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, if the horse moves from that stall and you're committed to that stall as the wagon, mm-hmm. what should you do? Mm-hmm. Well, you should unhook, mm-hmm. because it's moving from a pro-life stall to a pro-choice stall or trending away.
Right. Let's say you're putting good things, carrots, say.
Yes.
You're putting carrots in the stall.
Yeah.
And the horse is there,
yes.
eating those carrots in his stall. And then the horse moves away and goes somewhere else.
Yes.
Because there's not any carrots there anymore.
Right.
So you were under the illusion that the horse was actually following the stall, the quote pro-life movement. But actually the horse was just following the carrots. And wherever the carrots go, that's where the horse is going to go.
Right. And the carrots in this illustration would be votes.
Voters. Absolutely.
Voters. Right.
Yeah.
So as you, as your pro-life wagon, they're taking them out of the wagon, putting them in the stall, and the horse is eating them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. Eating them, mm-hmm. until the horse gets a sense that there aren't as many carrots in this stall as there are in the other stall, mm-hmm. and then the horse starts to move to the other stall. Now mm-hmm. you have a choice, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
That stall is the pro-choice stall that now seems to have more carrots, mm-hmm. or different carrots, or better carrots, mm-hmm. or the illusion of better carrots.
Apples, right?
Apple, whatever it may be.
Horses love apples.
Anything, yeah. right? And it starts to move to this other stall. What should you do?
Right.
If you're committed to the stall, you unhook, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then actually you're less committed to the stall.
than you are to the horse.
To the horse.
Right.
And thus you see the hypocrisy.
Right. And so essentially what David French is arguing is that the pro-life movement has framed itself as a political movement,
yes.
and has hitched its wagon,
so to speak,
to Donald Trump.
Yes.
And when Donald Trump essentially abandoned his pro-life principles for votes,
yes.
many in the pro-life movement, especially in the political side
yes.
of the pro-life movement, followed Donald Trump instead of sticking to their principles.
Absolutely.
That's the hypocrisy that David French is pointing out. And I think, sadly, he's mostly right about that analysis.
Absolutely. I think he is.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's a distinction that unfortunately, maybe to some degree, is very troubling and problematic. Mm-hmm. Because if you look on the pro-choice side mm-hmm. and you use the same illustration, mm-hmm. if a pro-choice politician, mm-hmm. right, begins to head towards another perspective, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. starts to say pro-life type things. Mm-hmm. The pro-choice movement's been pretty disciplined
mm-hmm.
that, guess what? You're not our horse anymore.
Yeah.
And if
we are going to not support you. We're going to publicly speak out against you. We're going to pull funding.
Yep.
We are going to aggressively get you to go back to the stall that you said that you were committed to.
Or we're going to get a different horse.
Right, right.
Get right. a different horse.
Yep.
Right? And so you may not agree with their perspective, which mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-hmm. But that principle of mm-hmm. we're committed to the stall, not to the horse.
Right, right. Yep.
right?
Yeah. And that's you see that consistent. That's why there's essentially no pro-life Democrats.
Exactly.
They've been actively sort of removed from the party.
Yes.
Because the party line was abortion on demand, right?
Yes.
And when folks were straying from that, they were told, get back in the stall or we're going to vote a different horse in.
Exactly, yep. exactly. And it's amazing how that disciplines the horses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it's yeah. amazing
right.
how that disciplines the horses.
Right,
right? right. And you've seen politicians who had pro-life perspectives that were Democrats, for mm-hmm. example, that typically was something like, you know, personally, I'm pro-life, but I can't kind of have that perspective in the public square because, you know, I don't believe that my personal, you know, religious beliefs or whatever should dictate public policy. That kind of thing, how they've tried to get around that.
Right,
that's not even acceptable anymore at all. And so you've seen that particular. So anyway, so that's essentially, I think, the point that he's making.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, it's a very good point and it's a legitimate point. In terms of that, in terms of when you frame that in the context of what was actually said there, that if you had a perspective that, and it's not really about whether you support a national ban or this ban or whatever, whatever. But I mean, I think some of the additional things were more problematic, like we'll leave it to your conscience. It's, you know, those kinds of things. Well, those things sound a lot more like.
Those are pro-choice
pro-choice values. Kinds of things. Because that's essentially what the pro-choice folks are saying is, well, look, there's no immutable, you know, fact, right? If you go back to the argument, that the reason that I'm pro-life is because life begins at conception, right, and is worthy of protection from birth to natural death, that is a conviction that doesn't give you flexibility around that. You don't negotiate around that. There's not a deal around that. You kind of say, no, this is a moral principle, right? That's what the trough is here,
right,
to speak.
Yeah. Right? What they're eating from,
Essentially. So that's kind of what we're dealing with.
Yeah. So again, we agree in a sense as far as that particular line of hypocrisy, so to speak, is concerned in Mr. French's article. But I think there was a place where he sort of then took that too far and I think is off base. And that's around this idea that he is essentially analyzing the pro-life movement as this monolithic political entity. And he's essentially painting the entire pro-life movement as being hypocritical because in his view, the entire pro-life movement has essentially done this thing. They've basically all made this into a political issue and they're just going to follow whatever politician they think is going to, you know, win regardless of whether or not he actually sticks to his pro-life convictions. And so from that perspective, I think he's wrong. So why don't you talk about A, why the pro-life movement is not monolithic, and B, why there are many, many people in the pro-life movement who have absolutely not been hypocritical about this issue.
Yeah. Look, I can speak about that from a number of different perspectives, but I think it's helpful to frame the pro-life movement first. Again, others may have a different way of viewing it, but when I started doing this work, you know, about 12 years ago, I tried to understand what's the landscape. And really what I came down to is that the pro-life movement kind of consists of these kind of two entities or aspects. And one I call compassionate advocacy, and the other side I call compassionate care.
Right.
And on the advocacy side, the goal of advocacy is to, you know, at the time, overturn Roe v. Wade, restrict abortion, limit abortion. It was all about legal, legislative, you know, policy-based approach to ending abortion in the nation.
Right.
Yeah, so you've got a number of different organizations that people are very familiar with that are on more on the advocacy side.
Yep.
And then you have what I call compassionate care, right? And those organizations essentially are having a care response to the abortion issue, and that's where CareNet sits. It's pregnancy centers, it's adoption agencies, it's maternity homes, and the church, right? And so you have these two aspects of the pro-life movement, and as a result, the advocacy side tends to be the part that is in the press more because that's a core that's in their tool belt, right? So, for example, on the care side, when we're working with a woman who's facing a pregnancy decision, we can't give her a policy statement.
Right.
We can't say, well, I hope you can go to this march.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? Or,
we hope you get out to the polls in November.
That's not what we do. We sit knee to knee with her and offer her compassion, hope, and help.
Right.
Those kinds of things.
Right.
So the pro-life movement basically has those aspects. And someone would even add education in there, too, which is apologetics and some of the other things, too.
Yeah.
I kind of put that somewhat in the care side to some degree. But you could actually probably say there's even a third aspect. But you can see that it's not this monolith. So when you have a title that says the hypocrisy of the pro-life movement.
Right.
You're actually casting a very wide net and saying every player in the pro-life movement has the same perspective. And I can tell you that on the care side in particular, that the reason why you do the work that you do on the care side and the reason why CareNet does the work that it does is based on that basic perspective of why you're pro-life.
Right.
Because we believe what? that life begins at conception.
And is worthy of protection.
And is worthy of protection.
It's in our mission statement.
It's in our mission statement.
Yep.
And we also believe, from a Christian perspective, that the pro-life response is the application of the great commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. So we're about neighbors loving neighbors, and the child in the womb is the woman's neighbor, or her near one.
Right.
And we're trying to encourage her to live out the great commandment, to sacrificially love the child in the womb. Mm-hmm. And then also, from a Christian perspective, and this is a unique aspect, at least from CareNet's ministry model, which is it links the great commandment to the great commission. So it's not just about living out the great commandment, mm-hmm, right? But it's also about the great commission to make disciples who live in love like Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. So we want her, him, everyone connected to this process, right? The child growing inside the womb to feel the great commandment, to be loved sacrificially that way, but also we want them to become disciples of Jesus Christ because we're modeling what Jesus did. He walked around living out the great commandment to what end? To fulfill the great commission.
Yeah.
So we as Christians in the pro-life movement are called to what? Yeah. Live out the great commandment to fulfill the great commission.
Right.
Well, those are immutable rocks. In other words, those are that wagon doesn't change.
Right. Absolutely.
It doesn't change.
Yep.
Why? Because it's tied to this immutable fact.
Yes.
The Great Commandment and the Great Commission, those two great initiatives. Mm-hmm. So if a politician moves in another direction or someone else moves in another direction, we're followers of Christ.
Who's
not moving in another direction.
Right.
He gave us the Great Commandment and the Great Commission.
And that's why it's really kind of unfair
for
David French to have characterized all pro-life groups as hypocrites, because the care-based organizations like CareNet have not wavered at all on that. Not an inch.
Because the why behind our work,
is
tied to
this
immutable, the core concept before, right? Because we're solving for what?
Lives saved. Right.
Lives transformed.
Yep.
Families built.
Yep.
And that
is
outside. Now, I always tell people, it's not that compassionate advocacy is bad and compassionate care is good or any of that at all. And that's why I call them compassionate, because advocacy is compassionate. Jesus was an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
When he went into the temple and whipped the money changers, right? What was he doing? He was advocating for
a vulnerable group.
A vulnerable group, which was the Gentiles, because the money changers had set themselves up in the court of the Gentiles, which was blocking them from having access to the temple. And that's why he says, my house is to be a house of prayer for all people. He's advocating. And when you see him with the woman at the well, what is he doing? It's care. It's compassionate care, right?
Mm-hmm.
So both of those things are part of sort of a biblical perspective, if you will, but they all have to be based on kind of this. Still, Jesus did all those things as a fulfillment of the Great Commandment, right?
Right.
Living 100%. Out the Great Commandment to fulfill the Great Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you get this immutable, like how your wagon don't change because when you're linked to that.
Yeah.
So
if
you do and you start to stray from there, that's when you can have that issue. So to me, it's not about a dichotomy of this is good or this is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a question about, are you using do you have enough whip, too much whip and too little care,
right?
Which can be the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And are you using the whip at the right time and the care at the right time? In other words, were you speaking softly to the money changers in hopes that you would, you know, get them to move and using the whip on the woman at the well.
Right.
So it's applying those things
in the right way, in the right time, with the right audience, et cetera. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, and so I'm just going to read this one line from French's article where he says, commitment to Trump was the ultimate test of your pro-life convictions. Yet now he is taking the most pro-choice position of any Republican presidential nominee in two generations. And this is where I think he's off base. And all the largest pro-life groups continue to bend the knee.
Yeah.
Clearly not all the largest pro-life groups are doing that. I mean, I would say CareNet is a large pro-life group, and we're not bending any knee anywhere. We're still continuing to do our work of providing compassion, hope, and help to women and men who are making pregnancy decisions. And I can certainly think of a few, even on the advocacy side, I can certainly think of a few advocacy organizations that appear to be bending their knee, but I can also think of some that aren't.
Yes.
So I think French sort of had a really good idea there, because there absolutely is some hypocrisy that's taking place, but I think he just ended up kind of taking it too far.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just to make one last point, although if you want to make a last point, you can too. I don't want to, you know, reserve that for myself. But I think it reinforces a sort of a problematic view of what it means to be pro-life.
Yeah.
Right? So he's sort of reinforcing a view that we've found to be challenging in our work, which is that pro-life equals political advocacy.
Yes.
Right? He's reinforcing that by basically saying, quote, all the largest pro-life groups. He's basically talking about all of the political advocacy organizations.
Right.
And that's clearly not an accurate way of assessing the pro-life movement. And it's not helpful to us either, because then we end up getting lumped in with folks that are doing very important, but very different work than we're doing. And again, it's really hard to do this. And when you have, you know, a fairly prominent columnist writing for the New York Times sort of reinforcing this idea that all pro-life is just all political stuff, it's just not helpful. So
it's not helpful. And it's not accurate.
It's not accurate.
which is the issue. It's not helpful, and it's not accurate.
Right.
In terms of what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And I do think it does lead to, when we all face that, you know, sort of perspective, you know, in the work that you do, no matter what work you're doing, that you've got to kind of pull back and say, what's the why behind my what? And when you, if your why is that I believe that life begins at conception and is worthy of protection, right? Mm-hmm. And that it begins at conception, ends at natural death, and our objective is to protect it, right?
Yeah.
Certainly our core is at the beginning, but we certainly support protecting it at the end. That's our core. That's what we're aligned to. Then the work that we do is going to be aligned to that, regardless of a position that any politician, on the right or left or middle or upside down, matter.
Right.
Because we're anchored that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that should be the lens. I think that French should be looking at the movement through, which becomes obviously, you don't get the headline, right?
Yeah.
That's clickbait.
Right. Yeah.
When the reality is, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The whole pro-life movement?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's
a bit of an overstatement, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of an overstatement. So
I think so.
But yeah, so, and I'm glad you mentioned what you just mentioned there around the why, because I think in an upcoming episode of CareCast, we're actually going to talk about how important the why is in terms of why you oppose or are in favor of certain things, and how the why actually determines what you do after you get what you said you wanted. And
so
we're going to kind of relate that to the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Stay tuned for that in our next episode of CareCast.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of CareCast. For more pro-abundant life commentary and practical resources, please visit care-net.org. There you can subscribe to the Abundant Life blog, giving you access to videos, ebooks, podcasts, and other resources to help turn your pro-life passion into pro-abundant life action. Until next time, we pray that God blesses you and yours daily.